Welcome to Sven Rentschler's new English Spoken Airmail podcast. This podcast is about healthy air, modern ventilation technology, and intelligent solutions for industry, commerce, and kitchens. This episode is part of our AI-supported knowledge series. We have compiled content from numerous Reven blog articles, videos, and projects, and presented it in a structured and understandable way for you. Over the next few minutes, a calm narrator's voice will guide you through this topic and summarize our collected knowledge in a compact form. Enjoy this episode of our new English Airmail AI podcast. Now we're back with a new podcast episode on a topic that affects us all, yet one we rarely give much thought to in our daily lives. The air we breathe every day. This episode is, in a way, something special, because it brings things full circle. A few years ago, we launched a podcast series entitled Misconceptions in Ventilation Technology and Air Quality Control. This series dealt with typical questions and misconceptions surrounding the topic of air. In other words, how air actually works, how pollutants are formed, and how they can be removed from the air again. The response to this podcast series was surprisingly strong. Many listeners got in touch. New questions arose, and interesting discussions ensued. Over time, it became increasingly clear that these topics were of interest not only to specialists. People outside the industry were curious too. After all, air is something very commonplace and, at the same time, something astonishingly complex. Eventually, this podcast series gave rise to a book bearing exactly this title. And today, in a sense, the opposite is happening. Today, this book is being turned back into a podcast. In this episode, we'll walk through the most important chapters of this book together. We'll talk about common misconceptions, widespread assumptions, and physical principles that are often underestimated. Because when it comes to ventilation and air quality, there are a surprising number of misconceptions. Many people think they know how ventilation works. But if you look more closely, you quickly realize that many of these assumptions are only partly correct. Sometimes they are even completely wrong. In this episode, we will therefore go through six key questions step by step. Firstly, how are pollutants actually extracted? Secondly, how does air purification really work? Thirdly, what is the difference between particles, aerosols, and vapors? Fourthly, can ultraviolet light actually remove viruses or bacteria from the air? Fifthly, how do air currents really move within rooms? And sixthly, finally, a very fundamental question: how can air pollution be measured at all? Let's start with the first chapter of the book. It deals with a seemingly very simple question: how can something be extracted? At first glance, this question sounds almost trivial. Many people would spontaneously say that you simply need a powerful fan or a high-performance extraction system. Unfortunately, it's not that simple. To really understand this principle, a very everyday example helps. Imagine you want to use a vacuum cleaner to suck up some breadcrumbs from the carpet. A perfectly ordinary task. As long as the vacuum cleaner nozzle is directly over the crumbs, it works without a hitch. The crumbs disappear immediately. But as soon as you lift the nozzle slightly, something interesting happens. The suction power drops significantly. And if you move the nozzle even further away, the crumbs simply stay where they are. This behavior applies exactly the same way to technical extraction systems. In ventilation technology, there is therefore a very important basic principle: capture first, then extract. This sequence is crucial, because only if a contaminant is captured first can it subsequently be reliably extracted. Many misunderstandings arise precisely at this point, because many people believe that a powerful extraction system automatically captures everything in its vicinity. But that is not true. Suction performance decreases extremely rapidly with increasing distance. That is why the correct positioning of an extraction opening plays a crucial role. If it is too far away, the pollutant will not be captured in the first place. And what is not captured cannot be extracted. That sounds logical. In practice, however, this relationship is surprisingly often underestimated. People often focus on the system's performance, that is, on airflow rates, fans, or motor power. Yet another factor is often far more crucial: the position of the extraction point. A good example of this can be found in commercial kitchens. There, large quantities of steam and aerosols are produced during cooking. Many people assume that a large kitchen extractor hood automatically extracts all rising vapors. But the reality is often quite different. If the rising cooking vapors are outside the extraction zone, they can spread throughout the room. The result is odors, grease deposits, and poorer overall air quality. A similar problem is also found in mechanical engineering. There, oil mist and aerosols are frequently generated during metalworking. These must be captured as close as possible to the source. Otherwise, they spread throughout the entire hall and cannot be extracted. This makes air purification significantly more difficult. Let us now turn to the second chapter of the book. This deals with a question that, at first glance, also seems quite simple. How can air actually be purified? Many people immediately think of filters. That is understandable. We encounter filters in many areas of our daily lives. In vacuum cleaners, in cars, or in air purifiers for living spaces. So the basic principle seems clear. Dirty air flows in, a filter traps the particles, clean air flows out again. However, in technical air purification, the reality is somewhat more nuanced. There are, in fact, two fundamentally different processes: filtering and separation. These two terms are often confused in everyday language. Yet they involve two entirely different physical principles. In filtration, air flows through a material made of very fine fibers. These fibers form a kind of three-dimensional mesh. As the air flows through this mesh, particles become trapped in it. You can imagine it a bit like a spider's web. The air can flow through, but the particles get caught. This principle is used, for example, in HEPA filters. HEPA stands for high-efficiency particulate air. These filters are capable of removing even very small particles from the air. They are therefore used in many areas. For example, in clean rooms, in hospitals, or in high-quality air purifiers. However, filters also have disadvantages. The more particles that accumulate in the filter, the greater the resistance to the airflow. This means that fans have to work harder. Energy consumption rises, and eventually the filter must be replaced. In addition to filtering, there is therefore a second principle, known as separation. In separation, the air is not passed through a filter material. Instead, it is deliberately set in a rotating motion. This rotation generates centrifugal forces. These forces fling particles out of the air. The particles are pushed outwards and eventually collide with the wall of a separator. There, they can settle. A very well-known example of this principle is the cyclone vacuum cleaner. In a cyclone vacuum cleaner, the air is set in a spiral motion. The particles are forced outwards and can then collect in the dust container. It is interesting to note that this principle even has a model in nature. Cyclones. Enormous centrifugal forces arise in a tornado. These forces can force particles, dust, or water droplets out of the air. Engineers have observed this natural principle and developed technical solutions based on it. This is how so-called cyclone separators are created. These devices utilize precisely this physical principle. The air is set in rotation and the particles are flung out of the airstream. Such systems are frequently used where very large quantities of particles are generated. For example, in industrial applications, in mechanical engineering, or in food production. You can also find further information on this in our new X-Cyclone Separator Guide. You'll find the download link in the show notes, the text accompanying this podcast episode. Let's now move on to the third chapter. This concerns a particularly common misconception. Many people assume that air is clean as soon as it no longer contains any particles. But this assumption is only partly correct. Because air can be heavily polluted without you being able to see anything at all. A good example of this is a petrol station. When you fill up your car, you immediately notice the typical smell of petrol. This smell is very distinct. But if you could examine the air more closely, you would probably discover barely visible particles. What we perceive at that moment are gaseous substances, that is, vapors. And this is precisely where a major misunderstanding lies. Many air purification systems focus exclusively on particles. But vapors behave completely differently. They consist of individual molecules. And these molecules are so small that they simply pass right through many filter systems. Another example can be found in metalworking. Coolants and lubricants are frequently used there. These liquids fulfill an important function. They cool tools, they reduce friction, and they improve the quality of the machining. However, under certain conditions, parts of these liquids can evaporate. This produces vapors. These vapors disperse into the air and can later condense again. This means they settle on surfaces, for example, on walls, on machinery, or in exhaust air ducts. A similar problem can arise in commercial kitchens. Frying or roasting produces grease and oil vapors. These vapors initially rise upwards with the warm air. However, when they cool down again later, they can settle on surfaces. The result is grease deposits. And in the long term, these deposits can even lead to fire hazards. That is why it is important not to focus solely on particles. Gaseous substances must also be taken into account. Let us now move on to the fourth chapter. This deals with a topic that has been discussed worldwide during the COVID-19 pandemic, UVC radiation. Many people suddenly got the impression that UV light could be a sort of miracle solution for air purification. But as is so often the case, the reality is somewhat more complicated. UVC radiation has actually been in use for many decades, particularly in medical technology. There, it is used to disinfect surfaces or to treat water. The principle is relatively simple. UVC radiation can damage the DNA of microorganisms. As a result, bacteria or viruses lose their ability to reproduce. In theory, this sounds very convincing. But conditions in ventilation systems are quite different. The air is constantly moving there, and often at relatively high speeds. This means that microorganisms remain in the area of UV radiation for only a very short time. This brief exposure time is often insufficient to achieve complete disinfection. There is another point to consider. The effectiveness of UVC radiation depends heavily on two factors: the intensity of the radiation and the duration of exposure. The stronger the radiation and the longer the exposure time, the greater the effect. In many ventilation systems, however, this exposure time is very short, and that is why the actual effect is often limited. Another misconception concerns the removal of fats and oils. Some manufacturers claim that UVC radiation in kitchen exhaust systems can remove grease and oil from the air. At first glance, this idea sounds plausible. But on closer inspection, a different picture emerges. Oils and greases can occur in the air in various forms, as aerosols or as vaporized molecules. Removing such substances from an airstream is a complex process. And to date, there is no convincing scientific evidence that UVC radiation alone can reliably fulfill this task. This does not mean that UVC technology is fundamentally useless. It can certainly be used effectively, for example, as a supplementary measure. But it is no substitute for physical air purification, nor is it a substitute for well-designed ventilation systems. In the next part of our podcast, we turn to two further fascinating topics. Firstly, the question of how air flows actually move through rooms. And secondly, the question of how air pollution can be measured at all. After all, you can only truly understand what you can measure. And that is often precisely where the difference between assumptions and scientifically sound findings begins. Let's now move on to the fifth chapter. Here we will address a question that fascinates many people. How do air currents actually move within a room? At first glance, this question sounds relatively simple. But as soon as you look more closely, it quickly becomes clear that reality is far more complex. During the coronavirus pandemic, Graphics were shown in many media outlets. They depicted rooms, and arrows ran through these rooms. These arrows were intended to show how air moves. The illustrations were often very clear. One arrow came from the left, another came from the right, and somewhere in between, the air was extracted. Such representations convey an impression of order, of clear flows, of a kind of invisible air system that can be calculated like water in a pipe. But this is precisely where a major misunderstanding lies. Air rarely behaves so simply. In reality, the behavior of air flows is significantly more complex. This is because air reacts to many different influences. Even small temperature differences can generate air movements. Warm air rises, colder air sinks. These effects are known as thermal flows. But this is far from a complete description of how air behaves. The geometry of a room also plays a role. The position of furniture, of machinery, of walls. All these factors influence the movement of air. And then there is yet another factor. People themselves. Every person generates heat. The human body continuously releases energy into its surroundings. This heat creates small thermal updrafts. Movement within a room alters the airflow. When people walk, when doors are opened, or when machines are running, all these factors influence the airflow. That is why, in practice, it is often very difficult to describe airflows using simple drawings alone. For this reason, engineers frequently resort to a different method: computer simulation. This simulation is known as CFD simulation. CFD stands for computational fluid dynamics. These are numerical calculation methods. Computer programs calculate how liquids or gases move within a specific space. Such simulations are used in many fields, for example, in aircraft construction or in motorsport. There, researchers investigate how air flows around a vehicle and how aerodynamic drag can be reduced. Such simulations also play an important role in ventilation technology. With their help, air flows can be visualized. This is particularly helpful because air itself is invisible. A simulation can show how air flows in a kitchen or how cooking vapors move beneath a cooker hood. This sometimes yields surprising insights. For example, simulations often show that rising cooking vapors are not always completely extracted. Some of this air can become turbulent because it is not extracted in time, and subsequently escape from the extraction system and re-enter the room. This is particularly the case when the vapors are outside the immediate extraction zone. In some cases, it even turns out that a distance of just a few decimeters can make all the difference. This means that an extraction system only works truly efficiently if it is positioned very close to the source. Here too, the fundamental principle of ventilation technology is evident. Capture first, then extract. If this first step does not work, the second step cannot be successful either. Let us now move on to the sixth chapter. This concerns one of the most important fundamentals of air quality control: measurement technology. For only if air quality can be measured, can it be specifically improved. In many areas of our daily lives, measurement technology is taken for granted. We measure temperatures. We measure speeds. We measure pressure. Yet air quality is measured surprisingly rarely. People often rely on assumptions. They assume that a ventilation system will work, that an extraction system is sufficiently sized, or that a filter is doing its job. But without measurement, this is difficult to verify. Modern measurement technology offers many possibilities today. For example, so-called particle counters. These devices can determine the number and size of particles in the air. They detect, for example, fine dust or aerosols. Such measurements are particularly important when it comes to health risks. But particles are only one part of air pollution. Gaseous substances can also play a major role. For example, solvents, or evaporated oils, or other organic compounds. To measure such substances, different measuring devices are required. That is why it is important to take both aspects into account: particles and gaseous substances. Only when both are measured does a complete picture of air quality emerge. In practice, however, often only part of these pollutants is examined. One might measure the particle concentration, but vapors are not taken into account, or vice versa. Yet a comprehensive analysis would often be very helpful. It could show whether a ventilation system is actually working efficiently, or whether improvements are necessary. Despite the technical possibilities, measurement technology is still used too rarely in practice. Many operators rely on assumptions, following the motto, "It'll work out somehow." But without measurements, this assumption remains just that. An assumption. That is why measurement technology is a vital foundation for truly effective air quality control. It creates transparency. It provides objective data. And it enables targeted improvements to systems. This brings us to the end of this episode. When dealing with ventilation technology and air quality control, one quickly recognizes a central problem. Air is invisible. We cannot see it. We do not see its movement. And often we only notice changes very late. Perhaps this is precisely the reason for many misunderstandings. For what we cannot see, we easily underestimate. But clean air is not a luxury. It is a fundamental prerequisite for health, for safety, and for good working conditions. In production halls, in kitchens, in offices, in schools, and of course, in our everyday lives. The better we understand how air works, the better we can clean it, and the better we can design spaces where people can work and live healthily. I hope this episode has given you some interesting insights. Perhaps it has also encouraged you to think a little more carefully about air. For although it surrounds us constantly, it often goes unnoticed. Yet it is one of our most important necessities. Additional chapter. Note on the book. Before we conclude this AI podcast episode, here is a brief note for anyone wishing to explore the topics covered in this podcast in greater depth. The content of this episode is based on the book Misconceptions in Ventilation Technology and Air Quality Control. This book has been published as part of the Specialist Book Program by CCI Dialogue GmbH in Karlsruhe. The CCI has been a publishing specialist literature on ventilation, air conditioning, and refrigeration technology for many years. This includes, amongst other things, current developments in building automation, issues of energy efficiency, new requirements in fire safety, as well as technical solutions in the field of ventilation and air conditioning technology. Topics such as climate change, infection control, and modern planning technologies are also playing an increasingly significant role. The book we discussed in this episode fits perfectly into this context. It is aimed at industry professionals, but also at interested readers who wish to understand how ventilation technology and air quality control actually work. If you would like to find out more, you can find further information about the book on the CCI website. We have included the relevant link in the show notes for this episode. There you can also view a detailed description of the book and discover further specialist literature on ventilation and air conditioning technology. Perhaps this will serve as an interesting supplement to this podcast episode. Thank you very much for listening, and see you soon for the next AIML podcast episode from Sven Rentschler. That was the new AIML AI podcast episode. The content of this episode has been summarized in an AI-supported knowledge form and is based on our experiences, projects, and publications relating to ventilation technology and air pollution control at Reven. If you enjoyed this episode, we would appreciate a positive rating and feedback on our English AIML podcast. See you soon, and until the next AIML episode from Sven Rentschler.